Welcome to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, August 25th, 2014. Scott Burton with you here today, sitting in for Joan Pardis. Today on the show, we'll hear from Assistant Fire Chief Ed Quinto about volunteer firefighter recruitment. Lena Gilbertson, the Big Brothers Big Sisters of Alaska Recruitment and Development Director, will be here to talk about their school program. We'll hear a mudroom story. Their next events will be on Wednesday, September 10th at Northern Light United Church and is themed on the water. The Girl Scouts' Tara Lee Ellis will be here to give us an update on their organization. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. About 20 tribes from the upper Midwest have spelled out their policy concerns to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The tribes say they're happy about recent meetings, but want the federal agency to turn the discussion into action. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports.
Tribal leaders from Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota met with the EPA in Traverse City, Michigan last week as part of an ongoing partnership called the Regional Tribal Operations Committee. Eric Chapman of the Lac du Flambeau Band of Chippewa is co-leader of the panel. He says the EPA should make sure it does all it can to protect the air, land, and water, and when needed, that EPA works with other agencies.
It's like up to USDOT if you're looking at pipeline or hazardous material transportation, USGS for permitting, Bureau of Indian Affairs for some of the programs that they administer.
Lacoutere Chippewa Tribal Chairman Mick Isham says the EPA needs to collect more data on the potential cumulative impact of each proposed mine, pipeline, or petroleum fracking operation in the Great Lakes region.
Not that we're opposed to development, not that we're opposed to mine, but we're opposed to pollution. And we look at a deer different than a recreational person or a sport person would, because we eat so much of it, and it bioaccumulates at us.
And Bad River Chippewa Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins Jr. asked the EPA to use part of the Clean Water Act to potentially stop a proposed iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. Wiggins says it won't be the last such request.
Today was like a little bitty lightning flash in what will eventually be a very cleansing thunderstorm, I think.
EPA Midwest Regional Administrator Susan Hedman declined comment on the talks in Michigan. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
Early voting is open to all citizens of South Dakota, but for some in rural communities on reservations, voting early can mean a long drive and lots of gas money. Those working to increase access to the polls in Indian Country say they're pleased that the Help America Vote Act is funding satellite polling places in small towns across the state. But Native American voting rights advocates say the funds are not being used everywhere they could be. Charles Michael Ray reports on one town on the eastern edge of the Pine Ridge Reservation.
Wanblee is the biggest town in Jackson County, but it's about an hour round trip to Kadoka, the county seat, where citizens can go to early vote. O.J. Siemens is a Rosebud tribal resident with the voting rights group Four Directions. He says HAVA funds could help bring equal access to the polls.
It's federal money, so we're not asking to have actual state money or county money being utilized to provide this equality. There's money available there that, you know, under the Voting Rights Act makes it possible to have these satellite offices.
Siemens gives praise to other South Dakota tribes and counties for using federal funds through the Help America Vote Act to pay for satellite voting. But he says officials in Jackson County have resisted setting up a polling place in Wanblee.
The office space is available. There's people there available. The money is available, so it just comes down to they don't want to do it.
Jackson County Auditor Vicki Wilson says the county can't afford to put satellite voting in Wanblee. She declined to comment further when questioned about the availability of federal funds. Siemens says Four Directions is considering all options on the table to see a polling place stationed in Wanblee, including legal action. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The Cherokee Nation is celebrating its national holiday over Labor Day weekend. It celebrates the tribe's history and culture and includes a State of the Nation address, traditional games, and a powwow. Activities also include a fishing derby and a film screening. This year marks the 175th anniversary of the tribe's constitution. The annual event draws thousands of visitors to Tahlequah. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council presents the 7th Annual Farmers Market and Local Food Fest, happening at the Jack Saturday, August 30th from 9 to 2. Resplendent with consumers, growers, and producers of fresh and local foods, this event also includes workshops and features local artisans and musicians, plus a pig roast on the front lawn. Discover the bounty of Southeast Alaska, Saturday, August 30th at the Jack. More information at jahc.org or 586-ART.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, August 25th. And with me in the studio now is Assistant Fire Chief Ed Quinto. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here today.
I appreciate you letting me come in today.
Well, it's great. And we're going to talk about volunteer firefighter recruitment today.
Huh? Yes. During this time of year, when you have a great influx of new people coming to Juneau, mm-hmm. you have UAS students coming in, Coast Guard changes, and people are going, you know, it's summer's over, what am I going to do? You know, this is a good time for me to do a recruitment drive for volunteers for our fire department.
And you're the perfect person to do it. You've been in the department, is it 35 years?
As I'm working on my 35th year
wow.
as a career person. And
wow.
plus I did over a year, about a year and a half as a volunteer. I started out at the Glacier Volunteer Fire Department when I was a senior in high school.
Wow. So, as a volunteer.
As a volunteer. And then I think I tested like in March or April of 1980. And there was a group of us. And I was one of the group of people that originally got hired in that year. So I've been here since 1980. So I'm one of the real old guys, you want to say. You know, I still
well,
run into fire.
It.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I still like running into fires, and I still get my gear on, but I still have the adrenaline rush. So.
And you enjoy it.
I enjoy it a lot.
You were saying earlier, it's the right choice for you.
Yes, I joined as a volunteer in my senior year. When I graduated from high school here in JDHS, I had a offer to go with a full scholarship to be an electrical engineer
uh-huh.
in one of the colleges down south. And my wife said, well, you can't be a police officer. Well, that was my other option. And when this I tested for the fire department, they offered me a job. So it was a career decision I wanted to make, and I'm glad I made that correct decision. So.
Well, we are too. Thank you for all of your service.
And you remember, I was working here at K2 before, so I'm going to pitch that in too, so I know a little
alumni.
Bit about the station.
So what would you say makes a good firefighter?
I think someone who wants to give to their community, help each other out, dedication. Our motto is readiness, dedication, service. People want to help each other out. Unfortunately, some of the sayings you hear is a worst day in somebody's life could be a best day in the firefighters.
Mm.
we like to, give to our community, give our time, and do something that's unique, unlike other places where you volunteer. You may want to do provide food or, give some of your time doing
mm-hmm.
some other things. We actually we do something that directly impacts that person. We'll put the fire out or rescue them from accidents, or we do water rescue also.
Okay.
We also do rope rescue from the mountains. We're landlocked, so we have to help each other out in Juneau. We can't just rely on people outside our community. We have to be able to be self-sufficient. So
sure.
we need people to help us do all these activities. We have 33 paid firefighters in Juneau in one given day. For instance, today we have only 9 on duty.
Okay.
So there's 5 total fire stations in Juneau. There's one at Lynn Canal that's not manned, operated by volunteers. We have one at Auk Bay that's also manned by volunteers. We have one at the airport that's manned by career personnel.
Okay.
There's five people there. Two are on the ambulance, two are on the fire trucks. So there's a fire or an ambulance call, four go there. And then one of them operates the airport rescue firefighting. He stays there just specifically for the airport.
Okay.
And then we have one in Juneau, downtown, what we call Station 1, and that has four people.
Okay.
And there we have two people in the ambulance, two people on the engine. And then we have another station, the fifth one, in Douglas. That's operated by volunteers. So in any given day, if you have a real structure fire, which we've had a few lately, you will get you may get at least four, you may get eight within 5 minutes.
Wow.
In a real fire, you need at least 30 people to run an operation.
30?
At least, yes.
Wow.
According to National Fire Academy Council, you need at least 30 people to run an effective scene. You have people doing entry work, you have people doing ventilation, you have people doing rescue work, you have people that are backup, you have engineers, you need EMTs for in case something happens. And right now we are always short. We're always taking what we have now and can only operate one emergency at a time. Now, where the volunteers come in is they do many different types of work. They can become what's called scene support, and they are the people that help out on scene. Basically, they're kind of like exterior firefighters. They don't put on an air pack. They don't go inside, but they handle hose, hook up the hydrant, run tools outside, take the ladder to the building, things like that. And there can be EMTs also. We provide all of the training and the gear. And then they can go to a fire academy, and they can become firefighter ones. And it's a nationally accredited program. So they can actually take that certification and go anywhere in the United States with the certification that we provide for free. Other departments, other universities actually charge thousands of dollars for these classes. And we also have we can train you to be EMTs, emergency medical services. You know, there's so many different jobs. You can be a driver operator for the fire trucks. If you want to learn how to be, you want to drive these red big fire trucks.
Yes, please.
We'll train you. You know, go to the scene and turn on your light sirens and put the hose out and squirt water. We'll train you to do that. You know, we'll train you to drive our ambulances. We'll train you to drive our squad vehicles. We'll do all the training. So because we want you to get the right kind of training and to be able to be there to help us out. The volunteers are there to work alongside with our career personnel. If you're a firefighter one, certified firefighter one, all our career personnel are firefighter ones. You are the same person that's going inside a building, putting an air pack on, and putting the fire out. If you're not a firefighter one certified, you're outside helping out doing other things. There's a lot of things that needs to be done.
It sounds like there's something for everyone.
Exactly.
You know, from driving to the EMS side of stuff.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about what you expect from a volunteer. How many hours a week do they usually dedicate? And what's a day look like for a volunteer?
Well, right now we have drills for our volunteers. We have fire drills, 2 hours on the second and fourth and fifth Thursdays of the month. So not every month has a fifth Thursday. So two-hour blocks of your time each month is a fire drill. And we do put on occasional drills on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have one coming up on next month on September where we get to tear up cars for fun, you know, practicing for real. But we get take our hearse tools and other rescue tools, and we tear up all these cars that are graciously donated by Skookum Recycling Company. So we spend a Saturday on that.
Okay.
But mostly it's a two to three hour drill on every other Thursdays for fire drill. Now, if you have an EMS certification, we also have EMS drills, which occurs on every other Thursdays.
Okay.
So there's plenty of opportunities for training, and right now we're trying to determine what is a minimum requirement. For a career firefighter, minimum requirement is over 200 hours a year.
Okay.
But that's a lot of hours. But right now we're we're not making it so much for the firefighter. For a scene support person, it's around 50 hours a year, so it's not really that bad.
Mm.
So there's a lot of things for these personnel to do. One of the things that we also do with the fire department, you've probably seen us out there at Costco or Super Bear this weekend, Friday and Saturday. We also do community events.
Mm.
We do like muscular dystrophy, fill the boot. We did that. We also do school fire prevention, especially in October. We have Sparky the dog. And we also do, we help out with a lot of things. We have an auxiliary program for wives or spouses, you know, not just the women, but also the guys, the spouses of the firefighters who want to not be involved with the fire department, but they want to help do other things, do some fundraising and things like that to help with the firefighters.
I bet you have a great community of firefighters
we do.
And volunteers.
I mean, once you're a firefighter, you're always a firefighter. We have retired firefighters, volunteer career. I mean, they come in the fire station, we talk. So, I mean, it's a special brotherhood and sisterhood of a community that we all bond. We all, once you become a firefighter, we take you under our wings and we train you and you start doing things with us. You're part of us now.
What's been the most fulfilling part of your career?
Boy, fulfilling, I don't know. I mean, there's so many things.
Is it that community part of it, you say?
It's a family thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if I need something, my family's there. If something happens to me, they're there to look out for me. Not only, I think my job, I enjoy being with the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoy helping out with the community, helping people out. I mean, I have a mother that goes, remember this little girl here? You helped deliver her.
You know,
and she's 8, 9 years old right now. She goes, this guy here was the first person to deliver you, you know, when I was at home. I'm, okay. You know, and I see those people a lot. You know, remember, you know, I was there from the car wreck or you helped me out. And so it's nice to know that people recognize you. Firefighters in general don't like to be recognized. We
mm-hmm.
don't like being in the front. We like to be, okay, thank us and we'll be in the back.
Yeah.
And, you know, any
okay.
kind of event you'll see, the firefighters are always in the back room because we just don't like being recognized. We know we do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just being able to do it is good enough for us.
Okay. If somebody wants to learn more about this, where should they go? Who should they call?
Well, first of all, you can call the fire department, which is 586-5322, or you can go to our website. There's two websites. One of them is ccfr.net, or you can go to the city's website, which is juno.org/fire, and or you can stop by at the fire station at across from the federal building, where it's our main headquarters, and somebody's there from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and you can pick up an application. And usually any of those ways you can pick up an application, or I've been putting brochures up on the bulletin boards. Check them out. If you're interested, we're always looking for somebody right now. We're going to have a Firefighter One Academy coming up in January, and that's why I'm hitting hard right now, because you need a few months to get acclimated to our customs, I guess,
yeah,
you know, our
sure.
environment. So join now, see if you like it. You know, if you want to do a ride-along, you can ride the fire trucks, ride the ambulance.
Okay. Well, sounds great, Ed. Assistant Fire Chief Ed Quinto, is there anything we're missing? Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's about it.
All right, you can give him a call at 586-5322. Go to ccfr.net. There's a couple websites there at the city as well, or you can go down to headquarters down there across from the federal building.
Yep.
Well, sir, thanks for your time today. It's been fun talking to you, and thanks for all your service.
Thank you. Bound by a wild desire.
hearts like ours be. I fell for you like a child. Oh, but the flames went wild.
Some Lori Lewis there with a Ring of Fire. Now in the studio with me on a Juno afternoon here on Monday, August 25th, 2014, is Joe Clark, program specialist from Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Alaska. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. So we were just talking about some of the programs that, that you guys have. How about outlining for our listening audience what you got going on?
Yeah, so actually at Big Brothers, Big Sisters, there are multiple programs that volunteers can get involved with. We have a community-based program, which is what a lot of people think about when they first hear of Big Brothers, Big Sisters. You can, as a mentor, get matched up. We call them bigs. You can get matched up with a little in our program and go about Juno and have fun and do all the things you like doing, like hiking or biking, go to the rock dump, those kinds of things.
And you're saying you have littles between the ages of 5 and 20? So a little can be 20 years old?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Depending on the program, in the community-based program, that's the one I was just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the school-based program, which we're really trying to increase awareness about this time of year, especially with school starting. We have volunteers can go and hang out at the school with the with their little. Have lunch, play board games, do, there's really kind of unlimited types of activities. And the time commitments are a little different based on the program you're interested in. In the community-based program, volunteer, bigs and littles hang out like 2 to 4 times a month. And in the school-based program, it's usually once a week. So a lot of folks who are, kind of more on a time regiment with work, they just know like, oh, every Thursday I go to, I go out to the elementary school and hang out with my little at lunch.
And I would imagine that organizations are okay with their employees doing that. It's a great way for an employee to give back to the community.
Yeah, in fact, there are a lot of organizations that that offer like lunch. You could go at lunch and count it as work time.
Okay.
But yeah, I think people in general are really supportive of giving back to the community like that.
And you were saying, overall, you have about 100 matches here in Juneau, something like that?
Yeah, give and take. Yeah, it's around that right now.
Okay, so we're thinking maybe 200 participants, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned a couple other programs. There's folks as a big, you can go work at Johnson Youth Center?
Yeah, Big Brothers specifically
okay.
can be matched with youth at the Johnson Youth Center.
Okay.
And that's similar to the school-based program. You'd go once a week and hang out with a youth who's living there, the requirement for all of our programs on the youth side is that they actually, everybody has said, I want a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are kids who are at the Johnson Youth Center who said, yeah, I want to have someone to hang out with and just be there with me and do play games and stuff.
And you have another program for folks exiting foster care?
Yeah, we call it SYNC. It's okay. Just mentors who might be interested in being matched with a youth who is just about to leave the foster care system. So usually 16, 17, 18 years old, we'll match them together. And it's really interesting to see mentors kind of guiding young adults into adulthood who haven't had a huge amount of support in that way.
Yeah, it's a great model, that's mm-hmm. for sure. And what's the need for bigs right now, like in Juneau?
Well, we have about, you know, over 40 littles waiting.
Okay.
We're in the process of we're processing a few volunteers, which is a good thing.
Okay.
Usually the fall is a good time to get into it. You know, we're about to go into winter, and
mm-hmm.
There are just tons of activities out there that matches can get involved with.
And how would you describe a good big? What's the kind of person that you've seen in the past that's been successful as a big?
That's a good, I mean, someone who's consistent, someone
okay.
who's just excited about hanging out with people in general, excited about being there with someone who wants to be there with them too, have this opportunity to build a professionally supported friendship, really.
Well, I imagine that, you know, your littles are just all over the place as far as likes and things that
mm-hmm.
they, you know, like to do with their free time. And so you probably need bigs who have a wide variety of interests, everything
yeah.
from gaming to skiing.
Of course, yeah,
right?
Everything. I get to personally interview the kids coming into the program. It's amazing how varied.
That would be really fun.
It's like kids say the darnest things every day. But it is a lot of fun, and it's cool to see how different everybody is. All these kids all have different passions, and all these volunteers all do. And you know, if you like baking cookies or you like running the ridge line, there's
mm-hmm.
there's someone out there that you could hang out with and that would match your passions.
Do any success stories come to mind that you've seen while working for Big Brothers Big Sisters that you'd like to share?
Oh, all the time. We have matches that were matched, you know, when the little was in, like, kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
like 6 years old, and then they were matched all the way through high school. And just actually, you know, we had five or six matches at the end of the school year this year that aged out, quote-unquote,
mm-hmm.
meaning they, you know, graduated high school, and they were matched for, like, 10 years.
Wow.
And they all said, you know, we're going to be friends for life.
Wow.
This is kind of a thing that sticks with you. So it's actually just amazing to hear those stories.
Yeah, it must be a fun place to work.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Not without its challenges, though, I bet. Too.
Of course. Yeah, everywhere.
If somebody wants to get more involved, become a big, what should they do?
Well, you can give us a call at our office. It's 586-3350. We're also located downtown right across the street from the Rookery. It's kind of a little secret door. But we're above what used to be the Pyramid Beads there, that whole second floor. You could stop by the office, see what we got going on. Just come in and say hi. We're usually pretty lively.
And what is the application process like? I imagine you probably have to do background checks, things
yep.
like that.
Yeah, we do background checks. There's kind of a two-part process in applying, so we'll do the paperwork and all that stuff, and then there's also a kind of an orientation where we would give the volunteers like a more robust look at what it would look like to be a big. Give you the program details, like what we can do as an agency to support you, all these things that we have events going on every month. Last month we went fly fishing, and we do zip lining every year. We have bowling, all these kinds of things. that all of our matches, community-based or school-based, will be able to go to.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
So, and, yeah, big group stuff. And then, of course, the big and littles can do stuff outside of that. Or I'm sure you encourage that as well.
Yeah, totally.
So,
yeah. Whatever is, you know, the comfort level for the volunteer and the family and that kind of thing.
All right, Joe. So, folks, you can call 586-3350. I got that right?
Yeah, or you can also go to bbbsak.org.
Okay.
And one thing that I kind of forgot to mention that we like to put out there is we also offer the ability for couples to be matched together.
Okay.
To share a little. So if you're kind of on the fence and not sure if you are able to give that 1 to 2 times a month, hang out for a little, you and your significant other can actually be matched together. And we actually have, I guess we call it couples matches, but we have like a mother-daughter match. They have a little sister together. And we, you know, any way to get people involved is what we want to do.
Great. Well, Joe Clark, thank you so much for your time today. Anything
Thanks.
Else you'd like to add?
No, just you can do it. If you want to get involved, just give us a call.
Great. Thanks, Joe.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 25th of August, 2014. The birthday of Leonard Bernstein, Lawrence, Massachusetts, 1918. Became music director of the New York Philharmonic at the age of 40. He wrote music for Broadway, On the Town, West Side Story, symphonies, ballets, a book called The Joy of Music. And he kept on conducting until just 5 days before he died in 1990. It was on this day, 1916, President Woodrow Wilson signed into law the act that established the National Park Service. There were 4 national parks, Yellowstone, Yosemite, Sequoia, and Kings Canyon. At first, the Army had responsibility for them, then the Department of Agriculture, but nobody was really looking after the national parks. And so the Secretary of the Interior, Franklin Lane, found a good lobbyist, a businessman, a salesman, a millionaire named Stephen Mather, who had been to Yosemite, and he was upset by the sight of cattle grazing and trails in terrible condition. And so he went about the job of organizing support for the parks. He organized a 2-week trip for 15 influential business leaders and politicians in the Sierra Nevadas, 2 weeks of hiking and fishing. And at the end of the 2 weeks, they were all in support of Mather's request for a national agency. He convinced National Geographic to devote an entire issue to the national parks, and then drafted a bill to create a Parks Bureau under the Department of the Interior, and so it was done. It was on this date, 1609, Galileo Galilei demonstrated his first telescope to the Venetian Senate in Padua. He had ground the glass himself, and it magnified images to 8 times the naked eye. By the fall, he was looking through a 20-power telescope. And it was on this day, 1875, Captain Matthew Webb became the first person to swim across the English Channel. It took him 21 hours from Dover to Calais, and 9 years later he drowned in Niagara Falls, trying to swim across and under the waterfall. Here's a poem for today by Gary Soto, entitled Evening on the Lawn. I sat on the lawn, watching the half-hearted moon rise, the gnats orbiting the peach pit that I spat out when the sweetness was gone. I was 20, wet behind the ears from my car wash job, and suddenly, rising to my feet, when I saw in early evening a cloud roll over a section of stars. It was boiling, a cloud churning in one place and washing those 3 or 4 stars. Excited, I lay back down, my stomach a valley, my arms twined with new rope, my hair a youthful black. I called my mother and stepfather and said something amazing was happening up there. They shaded their eyes from the porch light. They looked and looked before my mom turned the garden hose onto a rose bush, and my stepfather scolded the cat to get the hell off the car. The old man grumbled about missing something on TV. The old lady made a face when mud splashed her slippers. "How you bother," she said for the last time, the screen door closing like a sigh. I turned off the porch light, undid my shoes. The cloud boiled over those stars until it was burned by their icy fire. The night was now clear. The wind brought me a scent of a place where I would go alone, then find others, all barefoot. In time, each of us would boil clouds and strike our childhood houses with lightning. Gary Soto's poem, Evening on the Lawn, from One Kind of Faith, published by Chronicle Books, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hey, this is John Elliott, and I'm really excited to come back to Alaska and kick off this season's KRNN Spotlight Series on September 4th at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. I'm going to perform along with Juno's own Irene Muller, and it's going to be a great night of music. Doors will open at 6:30 for the 7 o'clock show. Tickets are $10 in advance at krnn.org or $10 at the door. Again, that's September 4th at the Gold Town Theater at 7 o'clock.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, August 25th, 2014. Scott Burton in the studio for Joan Partis. And with me here now in the studio is the Girl Scouts, Tara Lee Ellis. Welcome, Tara Lee.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to have you here today.
Thanks.
So it's the season.
It is. It's back to school.
Yeah,
so it's back to Girl Scouts, back to troop. We've had a great summer of events, and this year we're starting up. We won't be at the open house this year, but hopefully information will get passed through the schools of how to get interested in Girl Scouts, and it starts at kindergarten age.
Okay.
So kindergarten and first graders are our daisies.
Okay.
And then second and third are brownies. Fourth and fifth are our juniors.
All right.
And then middle school, it goes cadets, and then up through high school. And all girls from K through 12 are welcome to become Girl Scouts.
Okay, and then they typically graduate from Girl Scouts?
They typically, hopefully they complete their Gold Award, which is similar to an Eagle Scout Award is their Gold Award.
Okay.
And then they continue and become leaders of today and tomorrow and even leaders of their own troops back here in town.
And you were a Girl Scout, right?
I was a Girl Scout. And my mom was my leader, and
wow.
We kind of... three generation Girl Scout family,
no
from my
kidding.
Grandma to my mom to my sisters and to myself.
And so, to Sincere now.
And to even my daughter who's in the studio today. Sincere is a daisy for the first time, and she just learned her Girl Scout law last night.
Do you want to share it with us, Sincere?
She's in a pass
now. She's in a pass. If she feels like it, we'd love to hear it later. Okay, Sincere?
But when she's a brownie, I'm sure she'll be bold enough to.
And so... tell us a few of the takeaways for you as a Girl Scout. What was fulfilling about it? What did you learn?
I think being a Girl Scout just gives you a little bit of extra courage and the confidence that you need to succeed. I'm just going over statistics of even like the women who've been in space. 100% of the women who've been in space have been Girl Scouts.
Wow.
Most of our politicians and women in politics have been in Girl Scouts. So there's something right with this program that's been over 100 years old of giving girls, whether the right technique of having them have a voice and the leadership skills to kind of continue and propel themselves forward into the future. So, and it's just not crafts and songs and cookies, you know.
And putting on necklaces Sincere is helping you with right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so what are some of the things that, say, Sincere starts with at a young age? Some of the, I guess, goals and tasks? And how do they grow as the young women grow?
Certainly. So, like, Sincere is in kindergarten. She's a daisy. She's learning right now just what the Girl Scout law and the Girl Scout promise. And it's starts to be honest and fair, all these good qualities, courageous and strong, responsible for what I say and do, to respect authority, and how that translates into kindergarten as opposed to somebody who's in 12th grade.
Right.
Well, they'll learn about our judicial system. But even in kindergarten, they're just learning to be kind and fair to their friends.
Okay.
Like, I can make good decisions starting now. And as it transpires, it becomes more girl-led. So the girls kind of lead their own journey of how they're going to be successful, the programs that they come up with. We have Troop 4045. They are cadet. They're sixth graders, or sixth, seventh, and eighth graders from Floyd Dryden. And their silver award is working with HUNA, all the single families,
mm-hmm.
and grandparents, and they're collecting food and rice because it's so expensive over there, especially in the winter off-season.
Right.
And they went over to HUNA. They saw the need. They did price comparisons of how much a bag of rice happened to be here in Juneau, even though it's expensive in Juneau if you're compared to Seattle, but even, you know,
yeah.
probably three times as much as in HUNA. And they thought, wow, there really is a need there. And the whole trip kind of on their own decided this is what we wanted to guide our project to, and that's how they wanted to give back. And it's been amazing just to see their little steps.
The philanthropy and community giving as well.
Exactly. And that they've, from just all the research to what it gives in to how is it, why is it so expensive, what can we do as girls, you know, to come up with a solution to the problem.
Okay. And you have an event coming up here on September, on Monday, right?
September 1st,
Labor Day
Monday. We have a great event. It's our third, third or fourth annual registration day at the tram for families to come down if they want to get their girls involved in Girl Scouts, or you haven't registered for the current year,
okay.
to come down, fill out a girls' membership form, and then you get a special rate to ride the tram with us and introduce all the different Girl Scouts. It's a great event. It's from 11 to 2 p.m.
Okay.
at Mount Roberts Tram, Labor Day Monday, so you'll have registration tables set up.
And do you need to get there at 11, or is it just sort of ongoing between 11 and 2?
Right, it's ongoing between 11 and 2. We'll have Girl Scout leaders there who are also looking to pick up girls for their troops.
How many would you say are in Juneau? How many participants?
So currently I have about 300 registered Girl Scouts.
Okay.
We have around 33 troops that are either registered or active, and it continues to grow, and we're all the way down from Yakutat down to Cake. There's Girl Scouts in your community as well.
And tell me a little bit more about how the troops work. So even in the same age bracket, you might have different troops. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
So a little bit different than Boy Scouts. So a troop leader will choose to lead a group of like 10 to 12 girls.
Okay.
Or even maybe just 4 or 5. You need to have at least 4 to become a troop.
Okay.
So you have 4 to 5 girls. We have about 8 daisies. As they get older, it's easier to manage. You're not
sure.
So tired. I'm like, oh, I have 12 kindergartners. And so they decide to follow the journey, or they decide what badges that they want to work on, what skills to try
mm-hmm.
and to earn. And then they do activities together as a troop. So the troop leader would prepare that, and they request the help from the parents as well. So it's more a family event.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's events that council puts forth, like songs and s'mores at Sandy Beach and different events. So if you just wanted to do council events, you wouldn't even have to plan your troop stuff, just get together a little bit. But there's many pathways that you can participate in Girl Scouts, whether it's strictly just troop, which is meeting with a small group of the same girls over and over, to different events, to showing up for being a registered Girl Scout and showing up for one of our events. Last week we did whale watching with Alan Marine, and so the Girl Scout families got to whale watch, and it was impressive humpbacks.
I bet.
So there's something always going on in the Girl Scouting world here in Juneau. It's a pretty big community.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. I was wondering, what are some examples of some of the badges you were saying people can earn?
Right. Well, the highest awards for our gold award, to our silver for our high school, and then the juniors, they get to earn their bronze award. But even badges, like for Sincere, like she earned one, learning to make a campfire, like a cooking badge. To Women of Science, which is our pretty big STEM and engineering
right, yeah.
and building program that we work with Allison Cooper on. with Allison Cooper as our STEM specialist here. But anything you can kind of want to even make one, we have one of touring the Capitol or touring our police station for the younger ones to the older ones really figuring out how to build a robot. So
sounds like a lot of fun. So that's this recruitment event.
I would call it recruitment registration event for current Girl Scouts to come down, see us at the tram, and then for people who are interested in Girl Scouts to come see us at Mount Roberts Tram this Monday.
This might be a hard question, but what would you say, what's the kind of person that Girl Scouts works best for? Is there a type of kid, or are they all over the place?
That's the uniqueness of it, is that it meets each individual group and goal. And even our little daisy book that we're reading about, the jelly beans that bring different flavors to the whole packet, it really fits for everyone, whether you like to work on your own or work in a group. It helps build those skills that you're able to navigate, especially in middle school. We have anti-bullying curriculum that just instills self-respect into these young ladies.
All right. Somebody wants to learn more about this event on Monday or just more information in general, where should they go?
They can just give us a call at the Juno office, 586-1710, and we would love to have more Girl Scout leaders, brave women to step up to help lead the next generation. And they can come see us at the tram and talk to us if they're interested in starting their own troop and leading as well.
All right. So September 1st, Labor Day, Monday from 11 to 2 at the tram. 586-1710 for more information.
Perfect.
Tara Leals, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you for coming in, Sincere. See you later.
This is Bird Note. Late August is a fine time to walk the ocean beach. Weather's growing mild. Gulls jabber overhead. Waves gently lap the sand. But look out to sea. If your eyes could take you beyond the horizon, you would see an astonishing scene. A vast migration is taking place. Offshore, over the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, millions of seabirds are on the move. Most are heading south, migrating past the U.S. coastlines in August and September. Fierce, predatory Jaegers that nested on the Arctic tundra are flying south to winter on tropical oceans. Arctic terns and skuas are departing on an epic journey, flying all the way to Antarctic waters. Shearwaters in the tens of millions leave northern oceans to nest in the southern hemisphere, many near New Zealand. Even puffins bid farewell to their shoreline nesting cliffs now, scattering widely across the open ocean for the winter. Meanwhile, back on the beach with the warm August sand between our toes, we relax. We squint out into the distant blue. Above the glimmering sea, is that a single shearwater we see, tipping above the horizon? A straggler, maybe? And a clue to that immense migration taking place just beyond our sight.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, August 25th, 2014. Scott Burton in the studio for Joan Partis today. Seems like we've had a bit of a kid theme today between big brothers and big sisters and the Girl Scouts just now. And I have a little extra time, so I picked out a Mudrooms, a story that seems apropos. This is Kathy Hawker on December 12th. She was part of the Awkward show, and this is a good story that exemplifies how great kids can be.
Our next speaker is Kathy Hawker. Kathy grew up here in Juneau, and though she has roamed, she has always come home to Southeast Alaska. She likes to draw, paint, hike, kayak, and learn from the natural world. She's also a former naturalist and big supporter of Discovery Southeast. Here's Kathy.
And tonight my story has nothing to do with art or nature. Awkward is directly proportional sometimes to your chronological age, and this is a story about how I learned that. By the way, I've changed a couple names in this story, and not really because it embarrasses anybody in particular, but maybe just for a little bit of mystery. So somebody you might recognize yourself. I don't know if you're here. I was in my first year of college at Harvard, a Juno girl in the big city, when some friends of my parents from Juno called up and said they were going to be in Boston and they'd like to take me out to dinner. Well, Harvard dining halls in the mid-80s specialized in dishes that included things like poo-poo platter and venerable vegetables, so I was really happy to get the invitation. So I met Ben and Cindy outside my dorm. We got in a cab and were whisked away through the streets of Boston and fetched up in front of Anthony's Waterfront Restaurant. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but Anthony's was kind of a big deal. This was where if you were a mover or a shaker in Boston, you ended up to go see and be seen. It was kind of a posh place. It was also a little bit crowded, so it took us a bit of time to get our table, but we finally got ushered through into the noisy dining room and seated. Now, I realize at this point you are imagining this dining group of three, myself and Ben and Cindy, but there were actually four of us there. The fourth member of the group is about to take over the story. She's Ben and Cindy's daughter. Her name is Amanda. And she's the kind of child who, through a combination of charisma, self-possession, gutsiness, and just sheer intelligence, is a force of nature. I had known Amanda for a few years, had babysat her on occasion. One time I was babysitting her, I leaned out the window to call her in to go to bed, and this sweet little blonde child had the audacity to glare at me and flip me off. But she also had the intelligence to head off any wrath on my part by flipping me off with the wrong finger. So here we are at Anthony's in the dining room, and no sooner had we sat down at our table than Amanda disappeared. We proceeded to order, and Amanda came back. And then she disappeared again. And this was the pattern throughout the whole dinner. It was very odd. She would just vanish and then come back to eat a breadstick or a bite of spaghetti and then go away again. And it was very disconcerting to me, but Ben and Cindy didn't seem too concerned, and so after a while it became kind of a game to look around the room and see if I could spot her as she disappeared behind a booth or went behind a waiter's legs or pressed her nose against the lobster tank. Around about dessert time, though, she came back, and she actually came back to stay. She sat down, and she demanded a piece of paper and a pen, and she started to write a letter. How do you spell dilemma? How do you spell anguish? How do you spell commiserate? Before we could ask, she folded up the letter, dropped the pen, and disappeared again. And then she was right back. We were just starting our dessert when there was a presence beside our table. We turned and looked, and there was a small, very dapper, very well-dressed older gentleman. He bowed slightly to us, and he said, "Good evening. My name is Anthony, and this is my restaurant. Is this your daughter?" Ben and Cindy nodded with wide eyes. Anthony said, "The senator and his wife would like to meet you." Slightly awkward pause, and what could we say? And pretty soon we were shaking hands with the senator and his very, very well-dressed wife. It turned out that they had come out for dinner. The senator's wife had recently been diagnosed with a very unfortunate illness, and she had broken down crying during dinner, and the poor gentleman was trying to help her and comfort her, but neither of them knowing about the little eavesdropper behind the booth who had decided that she needed to write them a letter of condolence. Names were exchanged, handshakes were given. As I recall, an address was also exchanged. It seemed that Amanda had just gained herself a couple of really powerful pen pals in Massachusetts. We paid the bill, headed out, waited by the curb. And I remember there were some kind of bollards along the curb. We were waiting for a taxi, and Amanda was bouncing back and forth and jumping on top of them still, just a ball of energy, when suddenly she stopped, froze, looked up at us, and we knew there was some very important question coming. "How come," she said, "how come it is you guys never meet anybody?" Thank you.
That was Kathy Hocker there as part of the Mudrooms organization presentations nights, I guess I should say. Their next one will be on September 10th at Northern Light United Church, and the theme is going to be On the Water. You can learn more about Mudrooms by going to mudrooms.org, a fine organization there. The weather for tomorrow, patchy fog in the morning, showers, highs around 58, light winds out of the southeast at 10. On Wednesday, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, highs around 58 again. Again, light winds out of the southeast at 10. Thursday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 60, lows around 49. Friday, cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 59. Saturday, mostly cloudy. Doesn't say anything about rain for the weekend. That's nice. Highs around 59. Sunday, mostly cloudy up. And, of course, rain likely on Sunday. Highs around 60.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, Ken Fix will be your host. We'll get an update on the Whale Project from Kathy Rudy and Bruce Botello. As part of our CBJ Department Profile Series, we'll get a report on the Juneau Police Department from Chief Bryce Johnson. We'll speak with Sarah Lidstone about the African Children's Choir and their concerts in early September. And the new Teaching and Learning Director, Ted Wilson, will be here to talk about the Juneau School District's report card to the public. Plus, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more Tuesday at 3 on KTOO News. As always, if you missed the Juneau afternoon or want to hear it again, you can find it in the local programs link on our homepage at ktoo.org. Tune in to K2 News tonight at 7 for the CBJ meeting. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.